Falcon remembered having read somewhere that Union Station in St. Louis was the busiest railroad hub in the entire world, with more than 25,000 passengers per day passing through the station. It was a claim he could easily believe as he stepped into the passenger ticketing and waiting terminal. An enormous gaslight chandelier hanging from a 65-foot-high vaulted ceiling dominated the grand hall. The floor teemed with humanity, men, women, and children moving to or from trains. Falcon went to an information booth.
Good evening, sir. May I help you?
Falcon showed the clerk his long row of multi-section tickets.
I'm changing trains here, going on to New York. I just want to make sure I'm on the right train at the right time.
The agent examined the tickets.
You came from Colorado Springs, I see. You're making quite a long journey.
Yeah.
You will board the Flying Eagle on track number 12 at 8 o'clock. It's just after 7:30. You do have first-class passage, and they're boarding first-class passengers now, so I'm sure you'll find the parlor car seats much more comfortable than the hard wooden benches of the waiting room.
Yeah, I believe I would. Thanks.
Falcon started toward a door under a sign which read, "Two trains." When Falcon stepped through the door, it was almost as if he had stepped from one world to another. Behind him was the large domed waiting room. Before him was the great train shed with 31 tracks. As the heavy trains moved in and out of the shed, Falcon could not only hear them, he could feel them in the pit of his stomach. He could smell the aroma of coal and wood smoke and overheated bearings and gearboxes. Wisps of steam drifted through the shed, almost iridescent lamp posts that illuminated the long cement platforms that ran the length of track between sitting trains. Falcon found track number 12, then showed his ticket to the conductor.
Yes, sir. You're in a Wagner Palace car, third back from the baggage car. Number 176.
Thank you.
Falcon started up the long, narrow walkway between the Flying Eagle and the Chicago Limited, which was parked on the adjacent track. Inside the Palace car, the lanterns were all at their brightest, as the few privileged passengers prepared for the long trip. Falcon passed a beautiful young woman who was trying to put a hat box in the overhead rack. The young woman was stretching to reach it, but it was beyond her reach. Her effort to reach the overhead rack presented every curve of her body in a way that caused Falcon to stop just for a moment to enjoy the view. Then he stepped up to her and offered his help.
Allow me.
He smiled graciously at the lady and reached up to put the hat box in place.
Oh, thank you, sir.
My pleasure, miss.
Unlike the day car he had taken out of Colorado Springs, this car was handsome and elegant in every detail. It was richly paneled inside with burled walnut and golden gilt. The seats were large and mounted on swivels to allow the passengers to enjoy the view through the window or to turn the seat inward for conversation with other passengers. The seat also reclined for comfort during the day, but when night arrived, there were private sleeping compartments at each end of the car. Falcon had not been in his seat for more than a few minutes when a young boy wearing a Western Union cap came into the car.
Mr. McAllister? Is there someone in here named Falcon McAllister?
I'm Falcon McAllister.
I have a telegram for you, Mr. McAllister.
A telegram?
Yes, sir. It come in this afternoon, and it said you'd be on this train.
All right. Thanks.
Falcon handed the boy a half dollar. He smiled broadly.
Oh, gee, thanks, mister.
Falcon opened the telegram.
Mr. McAllister, Loomis Tate and his gang murdered guard and escaped jail this morning. Stop. Thought you should be informed of situation. Stop. James Portalis.
Good God.
At midnight, when the train reached Indianapolis, Falcon left it long enough to go into the depot and send a telegram back to Portalis, asking if he should still fetch his brother and sister. The next morning, in Philadelphia, he received a telegram answering in the affirmative. Falcon arrived at Grand Central Station in New York on the evening of the sixth day of travel. He had not informed Andrew and Rosanna that he was coming to New York, and he made no effort to contact them now. Instead, he checked into Bixby Hotel on Broadway, bought a copy of the New York Times, then went to his room to relax and read the paper. Under the entertainment section, He saw an article about Andrew and Roseanne.
For 2 months now, since the start of the season, the more sophisticated playgoers in New York have enjoyed a performance that is so lavish in its staging, so rich in its orchestral presentation, and so aptly played by the actors that no other offering is its equal. I'm talking about the play entitled The Mulligan Guard Ball, which has enjoyed a very successful run at the Bijou Opera House on Broadway. Of course, the Mulligan Guard Ball has been presented on the New York stage before, but never with the plentitude of talent as displayed by its two principal players, Andrew and Rosanna McAllister. Equal to Sarah Bernhardt and Edwin Booth in their thespian skills, the two McAllisters give a performance that must be seen by any aficionado of the theater. Such is the pity that tomorrow night will be the last night of this fine show. Any who have not seen the play and can avail themselves of the opportunity to do so would be well advised to take advantage of this, the last performance, not only of this company's production, but perhaps of any future production.
Falcon had been planning to contact his siblings where they lived, but after reading the paper, he had a better idea. The message on the marquee of the Bijou Opera House advertised the performance in letters so large that even passengers in the carriages on Broadway could read it clearly. Last night, one performance only, Andrew and Rosanna McAllister, starring in Harrigan and Hart's Mulligan Guard Ball. A colorful poster in front of the theater had a photograph of the principal players wearing the military costumes of their roles. Hired cabs and liveried carriages disgorged patrons in front of the theater as they filed in to catch this, the very last night.
Have you ever seen the McAllisters? Ugh, they're simply brilliant.
Were they already in show business when they met and married?
Oh, my dear, they aren't married. They're brother and sister.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah, and they're from quite a colorful family. The father was Daniel Boone, or Davy Crockett, or some such person.
Curtain call! 5 minutes until curtain call! Curtain call!
Oh, we better hurry. Get inside.
The lobby gradually cleared as everyone moved quickly down into the theater to claim their seats. Curtains open to disclose the two stars standing on the stage. Rosanna McAllister, wearing the ill-fitting parody of a militia uniform, was playing Kate. In character, she stepped to the middle of the stage, then clasping her hand across her heart, moted loudly enough to be heard by all 1,500 patrons.
McSweeney, what's the name of the hall the young Mulligans have hired for the ball?
Andrew McAllister, her co-star and brother, wearing a similar uniform, was playing McSweeney. He listened attentively, then spreading his arms wide, turned to the audience to deliver his response.
Sure, and this is the harp and shamrock, Katie, my darling.
I want to see the hall look nice. Will you do what I say?
Yes, sling on anything, Kate. I'm with you.
No, but fix the hall the way I want it. Get a row of American flags on the right hand, with the Irish flags blending between them. Then get a row of wax candles on the balcony and put a sign on it, "Look out for the drip." Get about 33 canaries and some blackbirds in cages and hang them on the chandeliers, and give word to the leader of the band, if a Dutch tune is played the whole night, he'll not get a cent. Will you do this?
I will. You bet your life, Kate.
Come on. Do you remember the old tune?
When we'd get home at night, boys, the divil a wink we'd sleep. We'd all sit up and drink a sup of whiskey strong and neat. Then we'd all march home together, as slippery as lard. The solid men would all fall in and march in the Mulligan Guard.
We shouldered arms and marched and marched away. From Baxter Street we marched to Avenue A. With drums and fifes of sweetly netted play. As we marched, marched, marched in the Mulligan Guard.
After the show, Falcon slipped backstage.
Dinner at Delmonico's, Andrew?
Delmonico's it is.
If you don't watch yourself with your midnight dinners, you'll grow so fat that oversized costume you're wearing on stage may actually fit.
What?
The duo spun on their heels. Couldn't make out who had insulted Rosanna from the shadow.
Sir, wherever you are, how dare you make such a remark to my sister?
Well, she's my sister too, Andrew.
Falcon McAllister stepped out of the shadows with a wide smile spreading across his face.
Falcon! Oh, what a pleasure to see you here!
Rosanna ran to Falcon with her arms spread wide. Falcon embraced and kissed his sister, then shook hands with his brother.
How wonderful to see you!
Wait, is anything wrong? How is our family?
All are well.
Oh, well, that's good news. But what are you doing here?
Can I come to New York to visit my brother and sister?
Yes, yes, of course you can. Anytime. Andrew, what is wrong with you? Does our little brother need a reason to come to New York?
Little brother?
Though he was the youngest, Falcon had grown up to be the largest of the McAllister clan, towering almost 6 inches over Andrew.
And of course he doesn't need an excuse. It's just that, well, quite frankly, I do not think of Falcon as being a man of the city. I believe him to be much more at home on some remote western mountain peak than on Broadway.
We were about to go out to eat. Will you have dinner with us?
Dinner at 11? I'm more used to supper at 6. But I'll be glad to go with you. I'll have some coffee.
And dessert. The chocolate cake at Delmonico's is to die for.
Well, there are things I'd die for, Rosanna, but I don't believe chocolate cake at Delmonico's is one of them.
Well, then let's just say that you will enjoy the cake. You must take dessert with us.
All right, all right. You don't have to twist my arm for that.
Delmonico's was on the west side of Fifth Avenue at 26th Street, north of Madison Square. The beautiful and fashionable restaurant was 4 stories high, with an elegant crest mounted in an arch on top. The windows were protected by awnings, as was the ground level. An ornate iron grillwork fence surrounded the restaurant, creating a place for sidewalk dining.
Isn't it beautiful? It just moved here 4 years ago. It used to be just down the street on 14th and 5th.
A uniformed policeman, wearing a domed pith helmet, was standing on the corner. He nodded a greeting at the McAllisters. Inside, Andrew and Rosanna were greeted as old and valued customers, then escorted to a table. A few moments later, the chef himself, Alessandro Filippini, came to their table to greet them.
Chef, this is our brother. He lives in Colorado.
Colorado? That's in the west, is it not?
Yeah, it is.
It must be quite exciting to live in such a place.
For our brother, it is exciting, for he has performed many heroic deeds in his lifetime. In fact, he is well known for his exploits and his derring do.
Yes, I can imagine this is so. Senor Andrew, I have read that before you came to New York, you were a wild man of the West.
A wild man of the West?
Yes, well, I'm quite civilized now.
Tonight, I am glad to say, I will personally see to the preparation of your dinner.
Venendo alla nostra rovola le conora, Signor Filippino.
No, no, no. Il mio amico Lenore, l'ironi minere perce, le sue belle sorelle di Veneri al Demanicos.
With a gracious nod, the chef disappeared into the kitchen.
What language was that?
Chef Filippini is Italian. I told him that by his visit to our table, he honored us. And he replied that our beautiful sister and we honored him by coming to Delmonico's.
Well, I'm impressed.
Because I speak Italian? Oh, there are 1 million people who live in New York, Falcon, and half of them are immigrants. Sometimes just to walk the streets of the city is like taking a world tour. You'll hear dozens of languages being spoken.
After dinner, dessert was served, and this time Falcon, who had sat out the main course, joined in, eating a piece of chocolate cake with his coffee.
This is good.
Falcon, about what I was talking about with Filippini earlier, this wild man of the West thing.
What about it?
Well, what you have to understand is that I must allow certain illusions to exist in order to enhance my persona.
Enhance your persona? That's pretty highfalutin talk for a wild man of the West, ain't it? Just exactly what illusions are you using to enhance your persona? It would help me to know that, in order that I not step on your toes, so to speak.
Well, I was a gunfighter in the Johnson County War. And I had a showdown with Billy the Kid. And I was standing by Wyatt Earp's side in the gunfight in Tombstone.
Well, they're calling that the showdown at the OK Corral now. You might want to refer to it that way.
Thanks. As you can see, I've pretty much taken all the things you've done and told them as if I had done them.
I'm flattered.
You won't give him away, will you, Falcon?
No, of course I'm not going to give him away. What I don't understand is why he would want to borrow anything from my life. I've been nothing but a drifter since Marie and our pa were killed. I've certainly done nothing as glamorous as all this.
Falcon took in the restaurant with a sweep of his hand, but all knew that the gesture encompassed much more than just the restaurant.
What have we done but play a few tunes, speak a few lines, sing a few songs, and dance a little?
On the contrary. I was at the theater for the performance tonight. I watched how the audience reacted to the two of you. They love you.
Andrew and Rosanna looked across the table at each other, smiling at Falcon's words. It was easy at this moment to see that they were twins.
It does have its satisfying moments.
Falcon took the last bite of his cake, then wiped his lips with the table linen before he spoke.
You were right, Rosanna. This is very good cake. I'm still not sure I'd die for it, but I might kill for it.
What?
I'm just teasing.
Perhaps, but with everything I've heard about you, one never knows when you're teasing and when you're serious.
Oh? And what have you heard about me?
I have heard that, while you have no fear, your very name instills fear in others.
And that's the reputation you want for yourself, Andrew?
Well, as I said, little brother, a degree of elan is absolutely de rigueur if one is to succeed on stage in New York.
Tell me, Falcon, what brings you to New York? Don't get me wrong. As I said back in the theater, you are certainly welcome to come any time you want. But you must admit, this is not a place you visit often.
I guess this is as good a time as any to bring it up. I just didn't want to jump right into it.
Jump right into what?
Into the favor I'm going to ask of you.
Andrew and Rosanna looked at each other for a moment.
Well, Falcon, if you need money, please don't hesitate to ask. You know that Rosanna and I will gladly give you...
Andrew, have you forgotten that much about our family? Don't you know that Pa left us a fortune? And I've had some pretty successful ventures of my own. I have more money than I could spend in 3 lifetimes.
Then what is it? What kind of favor could Rosanna and I possibly do for you?
Do you remember Colorado Springs?
Yes, of course I do. It's a place where people with consumption go to take the waters and the cures.
Yeah. In fact, my old friend Doc Holliday was there for that. But it's much more than a place where people come to take the cure now. It's also a place where people come to see the mountains, enjoy the West, and stay in the Broadmoor.
The Broadmoor? I don't remember the Broadmoor.
No, you couldn't remember it because it wasn't there the last time you were in Colorado. How long has it been, anyway?
Oh, heavens, I don't know. 6 or 7 years, at least.
You should come for a visit. It won't be a hard trip. There's train service from New York all the way to Colorado Springs now. You'll have to change trains a few times, but that's not a problem.
Oh, well, I would like to get back out there sometime. I'd like to see our brothers and to visit our parents' grave and just have a look around at the place of my youth.
Well, good, then it's all settled. You'll come to Colorado Springs and you'll play the Broadmoor.
What? What do you mean it's all settled? And what do you mean we will play at the Broadmoor? That's the second time you have mentioned that. Just exactly what is the Broadmoor, anyway?
The Broadmoor is the best hotel west of the Mississippi River. It's also a restaurant, nearly as good as this one, as well as a gambling establishment and a theater. When I say that you'll play there, of course I mean that you'll perform your act there. You think about it. You'll win over thousands of new admirers.
Why in heaven's name would I want to do something like that?
Because I told James you would.
You told James? Who is James?
Count James Portalis. He's seen you perform, both here in New York and in Europe. He's one of your biggest admirers. When he learned I was your brother, well, it really lifted me in his eyes. I must say, it made me very proud to be able to claim you.
No, I will not go to some jerkwater town in the wilds of the West and perform like some court jester. It is a matter of artistic integrity.
Andrew, what is wrong with you? Of course we'll go. It sounds to me as if Falcon has given his word. Surely you haven't forgotten the lessons we learned from Papa, have you? He always told us it is family above all other things.
I remember. And I'm sorry that Falcon gave his word. I really am. But this family thing goes both ways. He should have checked with us before he did such a thing. Anyway, even if we did agree to go, can you see us convincing our manager? He gets 10% of all our earnings. Now, how are we going to explain to him that we are going to play at some hotel establishment in Colorado Springs in order to generate goodwill for our brother? What is 10% of goodwill?
About $2,500.
I beg your pardon? Did you say $2,500?
That would be your manager's percentage of goodwill.
I'm sure I have no idea what you're talking about.
Unless my math is faulty, 10% of $25,000 is $2,500.
$25,000?
That's the amount Count Portlis has agreed to pay you, if you'll come for 2 weeks.
He'll pay us that much? Just for 2 weeks' work?
Yeah.
That's impossible. We don't get that much in 6 months on the New York stage.
I told you, Count is a very big admirer.
A Count? Is that just something people call him, or is he
real? No, he's a real Count.
2 weeks, you say?
2 weeks. Andrew looked across the table at his sister.
What do you say, Rosanna? Should we take 2 weeks from our busy schedule to go to Colorado Springs for $25,000?
I already told him I would go for nothing. With or without you, I would go. After all, he is our brother.
Well, that's true. He is our brother, and what sort of siblings would we be if we did not answer his call for help? Very well, Falcon. Since you have given your word to the Count, we will go.
Well, thank you. And it's good to see that your artistic integrity can be bought.
Touché, little brother. Touché.
As they were leaving the restaurant a few minutes later, a policeman came toward him and held up his hand.
Aren't you the McAllisters?
Yes. We'll be glad to sign an autograph, but you are going to have to furnish the paper and pen, I fear.
No, it's nothing like that. But I'm going to have to ask you to come with me.
Come with you? Why?
We've received a warning that your lives may be in danger. I'm to protect you.
How do you plan to protect us?
And who are you?
This is my brother, Falcon.
He can go his own way. My orders were to protect you and your sister, not you, your sister, and your brother.
Whatever you have in mind for us must include Falcon.
Well, very well, but we must move quickly. I want you folks to come this way.
He pointed toward the alley.
You want us to go into that alley? What on earth for?
It's police business. Don't give me any trouble now.
Well, it just seems odd that you would want us to go into an alley with you. In all the time I've lived in New York, I've tried to avoid dark alleys, particularly at night.
Into the alley with you now, and don't give me any more of your trouble.
The policeman reached out to give Andrew a slight push.
What's your badge number?
My badge number? What do you want my badge number for? You gonna report me for doing my job?
No.
Falcon stepped up to the officer and put his hand over the metal shield.
I just want to know if you know your number.
Well, of course I know.
The policeman glanced down toward his badge, only to see Falcon's hand covering it.
It's 2715.
All right, it's 2715. What does that mean?
Here's the funny thing about this badge number. When we arrived, we were greeted by a policeman who was wearing this very badge. In fact, he was also wearing this coat, because I remember seeing this repair.
Falcon pointed to a mended spot on the police tunic.
You're a phony.
You're crazy.
What did you do with the other officer?
Suddenly, the policeman made a grab for his pistol, but when his hand reached the holster, it was empty.
What the hell?
Are you looking for this?
Falcon held up the policeman's gun. The policeman turned and started running.
Help me find him.
Find him? Find who?
The real policeman. He has to be around here somewhere.
Falcon disappeared into the same alley the phony cop had wanted him to enter.
Falcon, be careful back there. Maybe we should find another policeman.
We may not have time to find another one.
This frightens me. I wish he would come out of there.
I found him. He's been hurt. Stop a carriage. We need to get him to a doctor.
Two passing carriages failed to stop. Falcon reappeared from the alley as a third was approaching. Like the other two carriages, it was a carriage for hire.
and though the driver wasn't carrying a fare, he made no effort to stop. Both Andrew and Rosanna waved at the driver.
Stop! Please! You must stop! It is an emergency!
Disregarding Andrew's emergency plea, the driver snapped his whip over the head of his team, urging him on into an even quicker gait.
He isn't going to stop!
Oh, he'll stop all right.
Falcon, what are you...
You son of a bitch! You shot one of my horses!
Yeah, and I'm gonna shoot you if you don't get that horse out of his traces and help us get this man to the hospital.
I'll do nothing of the kind!
Jumping down from the carriage, the man started toward Falcon, holding the whip over his head.
What I'm gonna do is leave lash marks on your face.
Falcon fired a second time. This time his bullet cut the whip away from its handle. The driver looked at the whip, then looked at Falcon. He seemed to be getting the message. Falcon aimed the pistol at the driver.
Get that dead horse out of the traces and hook up the other one. Then take us to the hospital.
Yes, sir, mister. Yes, sir, whatever you say.
When they reached the hospital, Rosanna went inside and informed them that they had an injured policeman. Two men with the stretcher came for the policeman, and as they started back inside, Andrew and Rosanna followed. Falcon looked up at the driver, who was sitting in his seat, barely able to conceal his anger.
Thank you for bringing us.
Well now, isn't like I had much of a choice, is it?
No, I guess you didn't.
If I had known there was a man who needed to get to the hospital, I would have took him. You should have told me.
We did tell you.
Yeah, by shooting my horse.
How much did you pay for that horse?
I paid $100 for him, mister. You cost me $100 tonight.
Here's $200.
Falcon nodded toward the single remaining horse.
I imagine he was so used to teaming with the other one that he might balk at teaming with a new horse. So you're gonna have to get two new ones.
What?
Here. Does this square us?
Yes, sir. I reckon it more than squares up.
Good.
When Falcon went inside, he saw Andrew and Rosanna sitting in chairs near the wall. He walked over to join them.
One of the people said the doctor would come out to talk with us in just a few minutes.
All right.
Falcon, would you really have shot that driver?
Yeah. Someone told me a long time ago that you should never point a gun at someone unless you're willing to use it. I've never forgotten that lesson.
Who in the world told you such a thing?
Our pa.
At that moment, a small, gray-haired man came over toward him.
Are any of you the McAllisters?
We all are.
I am Dr. Block. I just examined the patient. Is he your relative?
No, he's a policeman. We found him injured and brought him here.
Is that so? Well... He owes his life to the fact that you were all good Samaritans.
You mean he's going to be all right?
Yes, thanks to the fact that you got him here in time for us to treat him. I predict that he will make a full recovery.
Oh, thank God.
Shortly after Andrew and Rosanna arrived in Colorado Springs, Count Portillus took them on a tour of Broadmoor.
I can see that a lot of planning went into this.
Yes, my dear. I have been thinking about it for some time. My first thought was to concentrate on the families and friends who come with the invalids to the sanitariums. You know that such visits have to be upsetting for them, with a loved one here who's in bad health. I wanted to give them something to do that would allow them to pass their time while they are here, as well as get their minds off their troubles. And this sort of diversion may well appeal to them. That is, those who like to gamble.
But it looks to me as if you offer much more than gambling.
Oh, indeed. They have a restaurant with a French chef and a pavilion for dancing. And there's every kind of sport imaginable. Boating, fishing, shooting, baseball, cricket matches.
Cricket matches?
Yes. We have a lot of Londoners who visit, you know. So the cricket matches are for them. And in time, we will have a golf course as fine as any they have in the East. Actually, what we are building here is something called a country club.
A country club? I'm not sure I've ever heard the term before.
Oh, that's not surprising, even for someone as worldly as you. There's only one other in the United States.
You consider me worldly, Count Portillus?
Oh, my... Please, my dear, take no offense. I meant nothing untoward. I just...
I know you didn't. I was just teasing you.
I can see why you have so many admirers. You are not only beautiful and talented, you have a marvelous sense of humor. I do hope you enjoy your stay with us.
I'm sure I will.
And your brother?
I'm sure my brother will enjoy it as much as I.
At that moment, Falcon McAllister walked through the lobby of the Broadmoor. Seeing a pile of newspapers on the front desk, he left a nickel, picked up a paper, and walked out onto the front porch. He walked halfway down the length of the porch until he found a rocking chair that allowed him to enjoy the scenery, but be far enough away from passerbys to enable him to read his paper in peace. Unfolding the paper, he began to read, and as he had expected, the lead story was about the visit of his famous brother and sister.
Amusements at Broadmoor. Famous New York actors brought to Colorado at great expense. James Portalis announced today that the famous thespians Andrew and Rosanna McAllister have been contracted to present a show of song, dance, and dramatic readings in the theater at Broadmoor Casino. Colorado Springs has in the past been woefully insufficient so far as entertainment and amusement for its visitors is concerned. To some, the natural scenes of canyons and mountains and pleasant drives afford all that is necessary in this line. But there are many others who seek their lost health in this most beneficent atmosphere, who require other diversions than that provided so lavishly by nature, and who, if they cannot find it here, will seek it elsewhere. It is a well-authenticated fact that in many instances in the past, people whose weakened hearts or leisurely habits prevented them from engaging in more serious occupations have left Colorado Springs for a residence in other places less beautiful, less bountifully endowed by nature, and less attractive in other ways because they could not find that something to do which was lacking here. The Broadmoor Company has been the first to supply the want which many have recognized and may fairly be said to mark an epoch in the history of the city. In bringing to our fair city acts of the quality of the McAllisters, Count Portalis is providing entertainment not only for the citizens who are already inhabitants of Colorado Springs, but also of a class who, when they came here, were not originally contented to remain.
Although the story of the McAllisters' upcoming show at Broadmoor was the lead story of the Colorado Springs Gazette, there was another story, also on the front page, that caught Falcon's attention.
A savage murder. Word has reached this newspaper of a tragic and savage event occurring within our own county. The bodies of Elam Rafferty and his family were found in their home last week. Mr. Rafferty and his son had both been shot in the head. Mrs. Rafferty and her daughter were stabbed to death. There's also evidence that both Mrs. Rafferty and her 16-year-old daughter had unspeakable horrors visited upon them before they were killed. The bodies were found by Mr. Lamont Peabody. Mr. Peabody had made arrangements to buy 6 horses from Rafferty, and when Rafferty did not show on the day agreed upon, Peabody grew anxious. He gave Rafferty 2 more days, then rode out to the Rocking R Ranch to ascertain as to why Rafferty had not kept the appointment. That was when he found all 4 bodies. The young girl had lived long enough to inscribe, in blood, the name of her killer. The name was Tate, and it is thought that she was referring to Loomis Tate, who avoided hanging in the week previous by killing Deputy Leroy Coleman and making good his escape from the jail in Colorado Springs. A note left at the jail was signed by both Loomis Tate and his brother Kelly. The note indicated that the Tates planned to take revenge on Mr. Falcon McAllister for killing their brother Drew during an attempted robbery of the stage between McAllister and Colorado Springs. Sheriff Smith visited the scene of the crime, then vowed a renewed effort to bring the nefarious Loomis Tate and his gang to a swift and unremitting justice.
After reading the newspaper, Falcon unfolded the note Sheriff Smith had given him when he had returned from New York.
To Falcon McAllister, we're gonna get even with you for killing my brother like you done, just you wait and see. Loomis Tate, Kelly Tate.
Falcon didn't really expect any trouble from Loomis Tate, who he was sure was far from here by now. But he had learned a long time ago to always be on the alert. A shadow passed over him, and looking up, he saw his sister.
So here you are. Enjoying the air, are you?
Yeah, very much.
And the story about you and Andrew. The editor gave you two quite a write-up.
Yes, I saw it. It was almost embarrassingly flattering. Count Portalis has just given me a grand tour of the facilities. It's very lovely. And our rooms. They're nicer than any hotel room I have ever visited. Have you seen the view from our balcony?
Oh, yeah.
It's breathtaking.
Spontaneously, Rosanna leaned down and hugged her brother.
Oh, Falcon, I can't thank you enough for setting all this up for us.
I was just the messenger.
Whatever your part in it, I thank you.
Their brother, Andrew, materialized further down the porch.
Rosanna, oh, there you are. I've been looking everywhere for you.
Well, I've been everywhere. The wonder is that we didn't cross.
Well, there's no time for joking now. Come on, we need to get dressed for the first number.
I'll be right there. Falcon, where will you be sitting? I always like to play to someone special, and tonight that will be you. But I can't do it if I don't know where you'll be sitting.
I'm not sure yet.
Of course you know where you'll be sitting. You'll be in Count Portalis's box.
Well, like I told you, he's not a count over here.
My dear boy, you simply don't understand. Once a count, always a count. Come along, my dear. We simply must get into our first costume.
As Falcon watched his brother and sister walk away, he smiled and shook his head.
Papa, how in the hell did those two wind up in Mama's letter?
That night, accompanied by a full orchestra, Roseanne and Andrew dazzled the crowd with an Irish-themed show. They step-danced, they performed from the Mulligan Guard Ball, they sang audience participation songs like Seven Drunken Nights, but they saved the best for last. For their final encore, Roseanne walked on stage alone in a beautiful green dress which showed off her hair, skin, and exquisite shape to perfection. She was holding a single yellow rose. The best form of advertisement is word of mouth. And word of the McAllister's performance spread through Colorado and even into the adjacent states. Extra trains were put on, and Portalis had to bring in extra chairs to accommodate the increased audience. Andrew and Rosanna finished their last night's performance to a crowd that was standing room only. After that, they were invited to a dinner given by Count Portalis to honor Andrew and Rosanna. The members of the orchestra and the stage crew were all there. Falcon was invited as well, and he sat at the head table with Portalis and his brother and sister.
My friends, I drink a toast to the most talented two performers in the world, Andrew and Rosanna McAllister.
Diners all lifted their wine glasses and drank. Andrew stood to speak.
Ladies and gentlemen of this wonderful city of Colorado Springs, I must confess that when my brother approached us to come here, I was somewhat reticent. After all, my sister and I had trod the boards of the New York stage and played the theaters of Europe. What could there possibly be for us here? Well, I was wrong. I was very wrong. Never have we appeared in a more beautiful setting.
Never have we been better received than by the marvelous audiences who applauded our meager effort. To the talented and skilled cast and production staff who served us, and to Count James Portalis, our most gracious host who made all possible, my sister and I give you our heartfelt thanks.
Although he wasn't sure how far they had come, Loomis Tate believed that they were at least 200 miles east of Colorado Springs. For several minutes now, they had been approaching a small town. It had risen before them almost as if it were a natural part of the terrain, the buildings blending into the prairie both by irregular shape and indistinct color. At the edge of town, they saw a building, a rambling, unpainted wooden structure that stretched and leaned and bulged and sagged until it looked as if the slightest puff of wind might blow it down. A sign out front read, "Ziegenhorns, groceries, eats, rooms." Loomis started heading toward the building.
Hey, Loomis, what are you heading for that dump for? Let's get on into town, find us a real saloon.
Yeah, I'm so thirsty I can spit dust.
We need some supplies. We'll get them here and go find a saloon.
What we could use is some more money. Now, I think we should rob the place.
No, not here, not yet.
Well, tell me, Loomis, just how much longer do you expect we can get by on what little money we got?
We'll get some more money. We just ain't gonna get it here, is all.
The men tied off their horses out front, then stepped onto the porch. A nondescript yellow dog was sleeping in the shade of the porch, so secure with his position and the surroundings that he didn't even open his eyes as they went around him to go inside. The interior of Ziegenhorn's was a study of shadow and light. Some of the light came through the door, and some came through windows which were nearly opaque with dirt. Most of it, however, was in the form of gleaming dust motes which hung suspended in the still air, illuminated by the bars of sunbeams that stabbed through the cracks between the boards. There were three men sitting around a cracker barrel at the back of the room. One of them, wearing an apron, was obviously the proprietor. But another of them, Loomis noticed with some alarm, was wearing a badge.
Howdy. What can I get for you, gents?
Your sign out front says you have groceries.
Yes, sir. We have got groceries. We got dry goods. Just about anything you might need, you can get it right here.
How about whiskey?
No, sir. A town ordinance says you can't serve liquor unless you got a license. And, well, since the marshal is right here keeping an eye on me, well, I reckon I better not do that. But you might try the long trail.
It wasn't until that moment that the proprietor actually noticed the albino, and the pasty white appearance brought him up short.
Something wrong, mister?
No, sir. Nothing is at all wrong. You said you wanted some supplies?
For traveling.
Where are you boys from?
We're up from the south.
West. Lawman looked confused.
Well, which is it? South or west?
Both.
Both?
We're from Arizona. That's south and west of here.
Yeah, I can see where the confusion might come in. Well, you boys are certainly a long way from home. Where are you headed?
That depends on where we are.
What?
What's the name of this place?
Eagle Tail. Not much of a place now, but we're on the railroad, so I expect we'll be growing somewhat. My name is Crack Kingsley. Fellow that owns this place is Hank Ziegenhorn, and this is Tom Blanton. Blanton here is the editor of the newspaper.
Marshal Kingsley nodded toward the man who was sitting on one of the other chairs around the table.
I didn't catch your names.
Ah, we ain't nobody important. So newspaper editor, huh? Well, shouldn't you be out gathering news or something?
Oh, no better place to gather the news than right here. Lots of folks come in here right off the train. Sometimes I get news just by talking to them, and other times I get news from the newspapers they leave behind.
It now seemed obvious that the lawman had not recognized him, and Loomis was not really interested in the conversation, but he let the editor continue.
Yes, sir. Before I came here and started publishing the pronouncement, I worked as a reporter for the St. Louis Republican. And now I use their stories, like the piece I did today about the McAllisters.
Your piece about who? Did you say McAllisters?
Oh, yes, sir. It's in the paper today. The great thespians Andrew and Rosanna McAllister came all the way out to Colorado Springs just to put on a show.
Uh-oh.
Can you imagine that? Why, the McAllisters have played on stage in New York, London, Paris, just about all over the world, I reckon, and they come all the way out here to put on a show for Westerners.
Uh-huh.
I know some folks are wondering why they did it, but it's not hard to figure out when you know the history of their family. I mean, their father was the famous Jamie Ian McAllister, and some say their brother Falcon is just as famous.
Did you say their brother is Falcon McAllister?
Oh, yes, indeed. Heard of him, have you?
Yeah, I've heard of him.
Well, I don't doubt it. After all, they say that Falcon McAllister is the most feared gunman in the West. And yet, or so it is told, he never uses his gun for evil, only for good and justice. Do you actually know Falcon McAllister, sir?
I've met him.
What's he like? I'm told he's a prince of a fellow.
Yeah, it's him, all right. None better.
Loomis could feel the eyes of the others on him, but no one said anything.
Perhaps you'd like to meet his brother and sister.
Thanks, but we're not headed for Colorado Springs.
Oh, no, you misunderstand me, sir. You wouldn't have to go to Colorado Springs. They're coming here.
Here? Wait a minute. You're telling me how famous they are, how they've played all over the world, but they're going to come here and do a show?
Yeah. Heavens, no. There won't be a show here. Of course, I would love it if we could get them to sing one song for us, but I don't think they'll do that either. But they are going back to New York, and the train will be passing through here tomorrow afternoon. And there is a chance that we might get them to come out long enough to wave at us.
What makes you think they'd do that? I mean, for a little town like this.
Well, for all that they're rich and famous, I'm told that they're very nice people. And I believe we can prevail upon them to at least say hello.
Oh, we've made a sign. It's down at the depot. When you leave here, you should ride by and take a look at it.
Maybe we'll just do that.
Oh, and if you are planning on staying overnight so as to be here when they come through tomorrow, I've got some beds in the back. Perhaps you've seen my sign out front.
Didn't know.
Yes, sir. 10 cents for a bed and a nickel for a blanket.
Well, we ain't got that much money. I don't see no need in wasting it on rooms when we can sleep outside. But I will be taking them supplies now, if you don't mind.
Oh, yes, sir, I'd be glad to do that. What do you need?
Coffee, flour, bacon, beans, and salt. Enough to last the 5 of us for 2 weeks.
Will that be all?
That'll do her.
Hey, Loomis, would you look here at this? Someone has actually written a book about the son of a bitch.
Strayhorn was looking at a display of books, and he picked up a penny dreadful to show to Loomis.
Falcon McAllister's Great Triumph. A Story of the Wild West by Swede Coulter.
Oh, are you a reader, sir? I have several books about Falcon McAllister. Being as he is a friend of yours, you might particularly enjoy this one.
I'm not much of a reader. Put the book down and let's go.
Loomis paid for their supplies, which they gathered up and took with them.
He called McAllister a son of a bitch? That doesn't sound much like a friend to me, does it to you?
No. Now I can't say it does.
Hank. The fellow that picked up the book, did he call the other Loomis?
Ziegenhorn paused for a moment and stroked his chin.
Yeah, I believe he did. It was Loomis, Dumas, something like that. Why, have you ever heard of him?
I'm not sure. But there's something about that name that sort of sticks in my craw.
Maybe you have seen him on one of your wanted posters?
Could be. Take a look when I get back to the office.
As Loomis and the others rode by the depot, they saw a big sign stretched out in front of the building. Eagle Tail welcomes Andrew and Rosanna McAllister.
That's something, them being McAllister's kin, ain't it?
Yeah, just fucking amazing. Come on, let's go have that drink you fellas been bellyaching about.
The long trail smelled of whiskey, stale beer, and sour tobacco. There was a long, polished mahogany bar on the left, with towels hanging on hooks about every 5 feet along its front. A large, gilt-edged mirror was behind the bar. Over against the back wall, near the foot of the stairs, a piano player sat at the handsome upright piano furnishing background music. There was a bowl on the piano for tips. Out on the floor of the saloon, nearly all the tables were filled. A half dozen or so bar gals were flitting around, pushing drinks, and promising more than they really intended to deliver. A few card games were in progress, but most of the patrons were just drinking and talking. The subject of their conversation was the upcoming visit by the McAllisters. Loomis and the others bought a beer apiece, then found an empty table. One of the bar girls came over to the table.
Hi,
Hi, boys. My, what a handsome bunch of cowboys you are.
It was then she noticed Michael's, but she held on to her smile.
Do you want some company?
Why, yeah. Come on over and join us.
Go away.
Loomis, come on.
Go away.
Fine.
Pouting, the girl retreated.
What'd you do that for? One of the reasons you come to a saloon is because of the women.
You can have women later. Matter of fact, with the idea I got, you'll have enough money to have all the women you want.
Idea? What kind of idea?
I know how I can get even with McAllister and make lots of money besides.
Really? How are you going to do that?
Loomis didn't answer Logan directly. Instead, he turned to his brother.
Kelly, when's the last time you was in these parts?
Not more than 6 months ago.
There used to be a stagecoach way station up at Gopher Creek. Reckon it's still there?
Yeah, I suppose it is. But since the railroad come through, they don't use it anymore. There's nobody there.
Good. We can hold up there.
Yeah, that might not be a bad idea. How long do you plan to hold up?
Long as it takes.
As long as it takes for what?
As long as it takes us to get the money.
I need me another drink.
We ain't got enough money to waste on another drink, and we ain't got the time. We need to get going.
Get going where?
You want in on this or not?
Well, yeah, I want in on it.
Then just do like I say without belly aching. Come on, let's go.
They were about 5 miles out of town when Loomis stopped and pointed to two horses that were tied to a cottonwood tree.
Let's go get them two horses. We're going to be needing them.
For what?
Form a plan.
You ain't told nobody what your plan is yet.
I'll tell you when it comes time to tell you. For now, we need them horses.
The voices came from just over a hill.
You give me back my clothes, Johnny, or I'll tell Mama.
Jesse is a baby. Jesse is a baby. Run to Mama, Jesse.
Logan, get those horses.
Logan got down to untie the horses. Just as he did so, a young boy appeared at the top of the hill. His hair was wet, and it was obvious he had been swimming. He was carrying a pair of breeches and a shirt with him.
You want your clothes, Jesse? Come and get them!
Johnny turned and saw Loomis and the others taking the horses. The laughter left his face.
Hey, mister! Get away from them horses! They're ours!
Throwing down his clothes, Johnny started running toward Logan.
Christ. Brave little shit, ain't he?
Damn!
A pistol still smoked in Loomis's hand.
Johnny, what's going on?
Another boy, much younger than Johnny, appeared at the top of the hill. He too was wet from swimming, and because he was naked, it was obvious he had been skinny dipping. He saw Johnny and ran to him.
God damn, Loomis! What the hell did you shoot that boy for?
Because he seen us, and we don't need anyone in these parts knowing who we are or what we look like.
Loomis turned and lowered his gun to shoot Jesse, but he wasn't there.
What the hell? Where'd he go?
I don't know. I don't see him.
Well, look for him. We have to find him. What did the dead kid call him? Jesse?
Yeah.
Jesse had run back to the pond on the other side of the hill. He waded into the water.
Jesse! Jesse, come on out. We ain't gonna shoot you. I'm sorry about shooting Johnny, but he run toward us. I thought he had a gun.
You knew he didn't have no gun!
I didn't mean to shoot him, and I won't shoot you. We just need to borrow a couple of horses is all.
What? Jesse slipped down under the water. He lay on the bottom of the pond, breathing through a reed, his breathing tube lost in a sea of reeds. It was a game he and Johnny often played. Looking up through the shimmering surface of the water, he could see that a rider had come right down to the edge of the pond.
Where are you, Jesse? I'll pay you for the horses. Loomis, someone coming up the road. All right, let's get out of here.
Jesse could see the rider turn and leave, but he knew better than to show himself yet. He made himself stay on the bottom for almost half an hour, longer than he had ever stayed underwater before. Finally, Jesse got out of the pond and crawled up the side of the hill. Looking over toward the road, he saw that the riders were gone. Not until then did he put on his clothes. He didn't go back to look at Johnny. He knew his brother was dead, and he didn't want to see him that way. Later that same night, Loomis, Logan, Strayhorn, the albino, and Kelly were waiting near a water tank alongside the Union Pacific track, some 50 miles east of Eagle Tail.
It was nearly 11 p.m., and the rails, reflecting the full moon, formed parallel streaks of softly gleaming silver that stretched off far into the distance.
Keep an eye on them horses, Michaels. If they get away out here, we'll be left sucking hind tit.
They ain't going nowhere. It's just those two we picked up's a little nervous, but I'm keeping a tight hold of them.
Kelly, go up and see if you can see anything.
Kelly walked up to the track and stared back toward the west.
You see anything? A light or anything?
No, not a thing.
Kelly got down on his knees, then leaned forward, putting his ear to the rail.
What are you doing?
Sometimes you can hear a train coming through the rails before you can see it.
Well, do you hear anything?
Kelly stood up, brushed off his knees, then his hands, and shook his head.
No, I don't hear nothing.
Are you sure the train will come this way?
No. It's probably going to take a dirt road.
You know what I mean. I mean, what if it took another track?
There ain't no other track. This here's the main line. It'll come here, and it'll stop at this water tower to take on water.
Hey, Loomis, how much money do you think we can get?
Well, the McAllisters is rich people, and I don't mean just the actors. I mean the whole damn family is rich, especially Falcon McAllister. He owns a silver mine down in Arizona. He has a big ranch, and him and his brothers own McAllister stage lines. I expect they'll pay a lot to get their famous brother and sister back.
Strayhorn, what are you going to do with the money when you get it?
I'm going to go back east someplace, like maybe St. Louis or Chicago, and buy me some new duds. Then after that, I'm going to get me a cold glass of beer and a hot piece of ass.
On board the St. Louis Flyer, Andrew and Rosanna sat in facing seats in the Pullman car.
This time next week, we'll be back in New York.
Yes.
Oh, that was a rather pensive yes, wasn't it?
Was it? I'm sorry, I guess my mind is somewhere else right now.
You're thinking about our next show, aren't you? I understand Clinton Stewart is writing a new play called Our Society. I think it may have parts for us.
Yes, I suppose so.
Andrew stared at Rosanna for a moment.
What's wrong?
Wrong? Nothing's wrong.
Something is. You aren't yourself tonight.
Andrew, have you ever thought about coming back?
Coming back? Coming back where?
Coming back here. Back home.
Rosanna, I can't believe I'm hearing you talk like this. Ever since we were children, practically from the first time we could talk, we've wanted to be performers.
That's true.
And we've done that, Rosanna. We've lived a life that others can only dream of. We performed in the White House for President Hayes. We were received by Queen Victoria herself. Surely you haven't forgotten that.
No, of course not. No one can ever forget something like that.
Well, but now you're saying you want to give it all up?
No, I didn't say that. I just asked if you ever thought about coming back home. Someday.
Someday? Well, sure. Someday. What got you started on this?
I don't know. It's just that, well, everyone was so wonderful to us, and there was such a freshness about it. I guess I was just getting nostalgic.
Next, you'll break out singing, I'll take you home again, Kathleen.
Porter stopped and touched the brim of his hat as he made a slight bow.
Would the lady and the gentleman like their beds made?
I think so. It has been a long day. I'll take the top bunk, Andrew. That way, if you aren't ready to go to bed yet, you won't have to.
No, I'm ready as well. You're right. It has been a long day.
Loomis! The trains are coming! I can see the headlamp!
All right, Michaels, you stay with the horses. The rest of you come with me.
Loomis led the others to a stand of scrub willow that grew alongside the track. This would provide them with concealment from the train as it arrived, but keep them close enough to act quickly. The train was approaching at about 20 miles per hour, a respectable enough speed, though the vastness of the prairie made it appear as if the train was going much slower. From this distance, the train seemed small, and even the white smoke that poured from its stack made but a tiny iridescent scar against the starry vault of midnight sky.
What if the train don't stop?
It's got to take on water. It'll stop.
Well, look at it. It ain't slowing down none.
Almost as soon as Logan said the words, the train began to brake. As the engine approached,
It gave some perspective as to how large the prairie really was. The train that had appeared so tiny before was now a behemoth, blocking out the sky. It ground to a reluctant halt.
All right, wait until the fireman starts putting the water in. They'll be paying so much attention to that, they won't notice us.
We're gonna get us some money too, right, Loomis?
Don't worry, when McAllister gets wind that we got his brother and sister, he'll come up with the money.
I mean, some money for right now.
Yes, Strayhorn. I already got that taken care of.
Loomis showed Strayhorn a cloth bag.
We're gonna take up a little collection. Folks that can afford to travel in a Pullman car will like as not have a lot of money with them.
What about the other cars? Don't you think we ought to go through all them as well?
I won't have time for that. We're here to get the McAllisters, and that's what we're gonna do. We'll rob the folks that's in the Pullman, take the McAllisters, and be on our way.
What about the express car?
Look, Strayhorn, if you don't like riding with me, go somewhere else.
No, you're the boss.
Try remembering that. Now shut up. Here comes the engineer and the fireman.
How's that, Austin? Am I lined up?
Yeah, Doodle, that's just fine. Hey, Doodle, you have a valve open somewhere?
No, why?
We must have a leak. Tank's damn near empty. Shouldn't be this far down.
Yeah, we'll have it looked at when we get to St. Louis.
Yeah, if we make it that far. Don't forget the run between Hayes City and Russellville at the 60-mile stretch between water tanks.
I'll slow down through there. We use less water that way.
All right, get your hoods on.
The four men pulled hoods from their pockets and put them on. With Loomis in the lead, the four men moved quickly alongside the railroad track, ducking occasionally, so as not to throw any shadows onto the yellow squares that were projected onto the ground from the few windows that were showing light.
Which car do you think they're on? Well, there's only one Pullman car, so that's the one.
All right, we know which car, but how are we gonna find them?
We'll find them, shh!
Loomis held his hand out, signaling for everyone to get closer to the train. Looking toward the tender, he saw that the fireman had his back to him as he was directing the gushing water from the spout into the tank. He held out his hand.
All right, he ain't looking this way. Get up onto the vestibule. Inside, let's go.
Four men stepped inside. The car was dimly lit by two low-burning gimbal-mounted lanterns, one on the front wall and the other on the rear. They walked down an aisle that was flanked by two rows of closed curtains.
Which berth you think they're in?
It don't matter which one they're in.
Reaching up, Loomis jerked the curtain open to the berth nearest them, then reached in and grabbed the hair of a young woman.